Before we get into today's episode, there's something I need to say, something that I think is very important to say, and a message that, as a white man in America in 2020, needs to be heard by the people that look like me. It will take 5 minutes, left or right, red or blue, please listen. I think by now we're all aware and all heartbroken because of what is happening in Minneapolis right now. The protests that turned to riots over another unnecessary killing of an unarmed black man at the hands of police. But I think what led us to this point we are at in the city is even more significant. In 2016, in Minneapolis, Philando Castile was shot and killed by a police officer for having a gun that he was licensed to carry. The people of Minneapolis peacefully protested. No one listened. Nothing changed. 2 months after that, during the 2016 NFL season, Colin Kaepernick took a knee during the anthem. That was deemed an unacceptable form of protest, and the conversation he was trying to start was corrupted by people pissed off because they were too stubborn to listen when he said he's not protesting the flag, he's protesting police brutality in black and brown communities, that he's protesting the institutionalized racism that he and every black person in America must deal with. Everyone yelled. No one listened. Nothing changed. 4 years later, weeks after video of Ahmaud Arbery being murdered by two white men was leaked because those men were not charged for 3 months, days after an unarmed EMT named Breonna Taylor was shot and killed in her home by police who were searching for a suspect who was already in custody, just hours after a white woman in Central Park was caught on video calling the police on a black man and lying about being threatened, a police officer with a long record of unchecked and unpunished use of excessive force knelt on a black man's neck for 10 minutes as he pleaded for his life. I'm 35 years old. I'm white. I've never been pulled over for driving while black. I've never experienced that fear that comes with seeing a police cruiser in my rearview mirror. I'll never know what it's like to worry about my son leaving the house simply because of the color of his skin. And I am fucking outraged at what happened to George Floyd. So imagine how the people in the Minneapolis community where Philando and George lived before the people that were supposed to protect them ended their lives. Imagine how enraged they felt knowing that the district attorney in their county, Mike Freeman, took 4 days just to arrest the officer that felt like he was under such imminent threat that he had his hands in his pockets as he used his knee to suffocate a man held down by two other officers at the same time. The people in those communities and black and brown people around the country tried to do things the quote-unquote right way. America told them they were wrong for complaining, to shut up and dribble, to stick to sports, and nothing changed. Everyone has a breaking point. And Minneapolis has reached theirs. That is why you're seeing the city burn. Nobody is condoning that. I am not condoning that. But I consider myself as logical as anyone, and trying to use logic to argue and reason with people that feel like they have been backed into a corner is just not going to work. We didn't listen when Cap knelt. We didn't change when the protests were peaceful. So please, this time around, just listen to what these people have been trying to tell you for years and years and years. Truly listen. North Carolina Central head coach Lavelle Moten shared a story on Twitter on Thursday that I think is important to talk about. A time in college when he was in a car with All-American point guard Raymond Felton. He was pulled over, pulled out of the car at gunpoint, and thrown on the ground because, quote, he fit the description. My friend Myron Medcalf of ESPN, a man that lives in Minneapolis with his family, shared stories on Facebook of the multiple times he's been profiled by police officers. If you're white and you're listening to this, go and ask your black friends if they have ever dealt with a similar situation. I'm dead serious. Ask them. I'm guessing you're going to be surprised and probably horrified at how many of them have and how little you know about those situations. Because they are dehumanizing, because they are evidence that those men and women are viewed as lesser members of society because they had the audacity to be born black in a white country. So please, white people, listen. Just shut up and listen. I have, And this is what I heard from a friend of mine, a man that played in the NBA. He has two beautiful daughters, and he told me once that he was relieved when he found out that he wasn't having a son, because he didn't want to have to spend his life scared every time his son left the house. I cannot imagine having to carry that with me every single day. Now, I'll leave you with this. The burden for ending racism, both overt and institutional, should not fall at the feet of Black and Brown America. It falls on us, on men and women that look like me. And the way that starts is to start listening to what Black and Brown people are trying to tell you. In the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, quote, "A riot is the language of the unheard." If you're not listening, if you're not an ally, you're part of the problem. Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Friday, May 29th, and I'm joined by a very special guest for a very special episode of this podcast. It is Kurt Heelan, the host of the Pro Basketball Talk Podcast, and we are going to be doing a full mock draft live here on this pod and on the Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. The way that it's going to work is I'm going to talk you through all of the prospects for the top 10 picks with Kurt, because he knows what teams need and I know what the players are who are available. Then after we get to 10, we're going to cut it off on this pod. We're going to go to the Pro Basketball Talk Podcast, and we're going to go do 11 through 30 over on Kurt's podcast. It's a fun exercise, but part of the reason I'm really excited to have Kurt on is he is a huge beer nerd just like me. And since this is the Craft Beer Cast, Kurt, I got to know what you're drinking to record this, man.
I do have a beer right here. In fact, you know what? Here, we'll do the fun part. We'll open it on the air, right? We
can just let's do it. I don't know. Oh, it sounds so good.
No, I got to drink off the top before that spills all over my computer, and that'll be the end of the podcast. You know what I've gone with is one of my favorites. One of the things we've discovered during the quarantine out here in Long Beach is a place called the Long Beach Beer Lab. It opened up not that long before. You know, there's a bunch of Libation and all these great craft brew places opened up near us. We haven't even got to experience them all yet. But what Long Beach Beer Lab had, it's a bakery and beer house. Like, it's basically anything yeast, I guess. I don't know what their theme is, but I'll go with that. We were able to buy sourdough starter in there. I had sourdough starter. I added to it. But they do some of the best like pizza in town, or one of the better pizzas in town. So we were ordering food from there and then getting beer. So I've got their hoppy pale ale. I like hoppy IPAs. It's a little early in the day before my work shift and before I'll do some NBA writing. So I decided I probably shouldn't go with the 8% alcohol IPA before we talked and I started working. Hoppy pale ale is just what it sounds like. It is a kind of a classic lager, you know, pale ale, but it's a much hoppier flavor, and I love that hoppy IPA flavor, so I've gone with it.
Yeah, I'm a huge hoppy beer guy as well as people that listen to this podcast know. And the one that I'm drinking is from the Six Point Brewery in Brooklyn. It's not the resin double IPA that I've talked about on this podcast before. It's their Bengali IPA, which is kind of their standard IPA, and it's, you know, Kurt, it's just okay as far as IPAs go. And the reason I say that it's kind of like the East Coast IPA before this New England style really developed. So it's not the hazy. It's really hoppy, but it's got kind of that like malt forward flavor where it's not as crisp as a West Coast style. And it's just not as good as the stuff that you're going to be drinking in California, which, you know, I've told you this before. I'm very jealous of the beer that you are able to have access to where you live on a daily basis. Don't ever for a second take that for granted, man, because if you come to the West Coast.
It's one of the things we bounced around, and we had a Friday night group of friends who would go out and we'd bounce from just trying to get to a bunch of the local, breweries that have opened up and trying to experience, man, it's one of the things I miss. I miss seeing those people. I miss hanging out and I miss the beer.
Yeah, it's the big thing, man. Before we get into the mock, just one more thing about the beer is that what I've realized is having to spend all day with two kids under 5 years old every day for 72 days means that like I've started drinking earlier and earlier in the day. And normally like I'm not saying like I start drinking at 9 a.m. That would be insanity. That would mean I would have a problem. But what I do is like I'll normally be cracking like some kind of beer, some kind of White Claw by like 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then, you know, by the end of the night, it's like you're 3 or 4 beers deep because every hour or two, like you have one in the afternoon, then you have one while you're making dinner, then you have one while you eat dinner, and then you have a beer like once you finally get the kids to sleep and you're just kind of sitting there on the couch. And by the time they're all wrapped up, it's like, wow, I am just churning through the beer that's in my beer fridge downstairs. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
I look forward to it. I got to get out and restock the fridge. I haven't, the beer fridge could use some restocking right now, but we still got some good stuff, but I really need to get out and just load up with some of the locals again.
Yeah. Yeah. I've made a couple of those trips and I'm always just kind of like, well, let's see. I just bought 60 beers. That's good enough to last me for what? Like 2 weeks. That should be good for 2 weeks. Right. And I don't know. that might mean you have a problem. So it is what it is, man. But you know, before we actually get into this mock draft, just a real quick word from our sponsors.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, Kurt, let's dive right into this, man. The way that we're doing the picks, since so much of the way this draft is going to turn out is going to be based off of what the draft order ends up being. It's not a draft where there's a very clear-cut number one pick and a clear-cut best prospect. So the way that we did this is just basically off of what the order is for the NBA, like if they didn't have a lottery or anything like that. So for us, the number one pick is going to end up being the Golden State Warriors. So Kurt, just kind of walk me through what they need, what's going on with this team, what's going on with this roster, how everything's going to end up playing out for them. Update me on the Warriors.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this on my podcast when we were just going over potential the top prospects and trying to familiarize NBA people with some of the people they may not know at the top of the draft. And we're like, look, if the Warriors get the number one pick, they are looking to trade the number one pick. They are not in the developmental mode. They want somebody. It's not that, whether it's Anthony Edwards or whatever, they would want somebody who could help now. And as we discussed, they could get that at number one, but sure, they could also get that at number 5 or 6 if they can find somebody to trade down a little bit. I don't know how much of a market there is going to be for that. It's a strange situation this year. And one of the things that's going to make it even stranger, not only is the draft, which they officially have not yet moved from June 25th, but everybody knows it's not going to be then. It's probably going to be late September or October. They're talking now about possibly putting free agency in front of the draft, which for a lot of these teams could change their needs. And the Warriors, I don't know how active they're going to be. They were planning on being a cap team anyway, and the cap's going to go down. So they may just look to trade down and find a veteran and eat some money, but we'll see. But look, their need is depth, wing, somebody who can help now. They are not in this. They are not in the player develop. They develop players, but they are not looking for somebody who can't help them in 2 or 3 years. They could certainly use help along the front line. I mean, that is still the weakest point. Not shockingly, their guard rotation is pretty good. And they're throwing Andrew Wiggins now. Don't forget they have Andrew Wiggins. Essentially trying to play him in a Harrison Barnes role as a third, fourth guy, somebody who can hit some corner threes and take over at spots and drive a little. I think he could thrive in that role. He's just vastly overpaid for it. But they could use help up front, but mostly they are looking for a more polished product than somebody that they got to wait a couple of years on.
Yeah, the window for them is much smaller than the window for other teams that would potentially have the number one pick, because they're kind of like in a win now. Like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, like there's only so many more years that they're going to be playing at the level that they're playing. So I would never take him with the number one pick, but I think like the best fit for Golden State, I kind of might just be Obi Toppin, right? Because he's the guy that can defend the rim a little bit, space the floor, give you some depth up front. He's 22 years old, so he can come in and contribute immediately. But if I just don't think that there's enough value there, and you're leaving too much talent on the table if you take him with the number one overall pick. So if we're going to assume that Golden State is keeping the number one pick in this scenario, I would love the fit of LaMelo Ball there. If LaMelo Ball, like for LaMelo Ball, more than so than the Warriors, I think that Anthony Edwards makes sense, but again, more so for Anthony Edwards than for the Golden State Warriors. If the Warriors are drafting for themselves, I think they have to take James Wiseman. He's the best prospect in the draft. He is a 7'1" center with a 7'6" wingspan. He has all the physical tools to be a very, very, very good defender. The big thing with him is like the competitiveness and does he love basketball? And a lot of the same questions we had about guys like DeAndre Ayton and players of kind of that ilk and that size. So, and I mean, obviously it didn't help that he kind of quit on his team halfway through the season. Now there were some other circumstances that college basketball fans are probably quite well aware of that went into that decision. But if you're going to draft James Wiseman number one, you have to do your due diligence. But if we're just, it just makes too much sense for a team that needs front court depth to ignore the guy that a majority of GMs probably think is the most talented player in this draft, who just happens to be a 7'1" center with a 7'6" wingspan, who like in theory could kind of be a Miles Turner type of player pretty early in his career.
Yeah. The other thing I really like about the idea of Wiseman is you mentioned like, okay, this is, and I've heard this too, but like, does he love basketball? Is he going to develop into, will he accept the role? Will he do the things he's going to need to do to excel at the next level? There's a lot to be said for being put in the right culture and a development. Look, a right culture at a young age. You come in there now, you're a little bit in awe probably, but hey, Draymond Green's not going to lighten up on you. He's going to push your behind in every practice, right? Like he's going to be all over you. Steph Curry's going to set a tone. Klay Thompson's going to come in there and work. Like if you don't work, and this is a culture within that organization, you'll be in trouble fast. And so I think I think that's a good tone to set for him, right? Like he comes in and they're going to be like, no, you got to put in the work, man. Like you just got to go and put in the work. And that could be good for him and get him to that ceiling where if he lands in some other development, some other programs, that does he get pushed that same way?
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. And the only thing I would add to it is that when you go to the Warriors as a 7'1" center, like you're going to be asked to play a role immediately, which is the best thing for James Wiseman at this point in his development. Yeah. Look, he has the potential to end up being like a very, very, very good five-man in the modern NBA because he could be switchable and he could protect the rim and he's a log target. And like the potential to end up being a guy that makes threes is there. Like I don't think I would bet on him becoming like a 35% three-point shooter at any point in his career, but like he is able to make shots from the perimeter and he has over the course of his youth. So it's not inconceivable that he can get there. And I don't think that you can ask him to be a superstar right off the bat. Like he's just not that kind of a player. He's not going to come in and dominate. But I do think that he is a guy that if you kind of like limit what you're asking him to do to just play this certain kind of role and then develop him along the way, I think it makes a lot of sense for him and for the Warriors. Like it just, if they have the number one pick and they're going to draft someone, I think it has to be James Wiseman. I
think, by the way, you talk about the minutes there. Here's who they're look. Obviously Draymond's going to play a little at the five in the kind of switchable death lineup type situations. There are other centers right now. Marquise Chris, long athletic, but really again, never developed. Kevon Looney, if he just gets healthy, like that's really the question with him. He's just whether he's ever going to be healthy enough to be the guy we thought he was going to be. If he can be, then he gets there. Like, and good for him. But they're not convinced. So like there's minutes to be had there if you can step in and play.
Yep, yep. That's exactly why it makes sense for him to be there. Should we move on to the next pick?
Yes, the number two pick, your Cleveland Cavaliers.
why are they my Cleveland Cavaliers? Why do I suffer with this?
Somebody listening. There's somebody listening's Cleveland Cavaliers then. The Cleveland Cavaliers. By the way, also with a 14% chance at the top pick. But look, you know what their need is? Talent everywhere. Like they are not in a position to be picky. They need talent everywhere. They like their backcourt, the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton. To me, neither of them's developed enough to really believe yet. But you're not, let's put it this way, you're not going to De'Aaron Fox. Hey, we don't need to draft Luka Doncic. We got a ball handler in this situation here. You're taking the best player available. There's nobody on this roster where you think we're good. They've got Andre Drummond. Kevin Love will eventually get moved. Larry Nance will be there to give them solid minutes. Seti Osman can give them solid minutes at the 3-4. Andre Drummond will opt into his $27 million plus next year, but I don't know that he's a long-term answer for them at center. They're not a bad, you know, like they've got some solid veterans, but they just need, they need talent, man. They're rebuilding and they need talent wherever they can get it.
So I think that the obvious choice here is either LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards. In my mind, there really is just kind of like a top three in this draft, and it is James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards, and LaMelo Ball. And I think, like, if I'm the Cavs in this situation, I'm probably taking Anthony Edwards instead of LaMelo Ball, even though personally I do think that LaMelo Ball is probably a better overall prospect, or at least has a, maybe not a better overall prospect, but has a higher ceiling. I'm very high on LaMelo Ball, and we can get to that when we get to the pick, when he's going to get picked. But I think I would probably take Anthony Edwards if I'm them. I at least just think it's a better fit because LaMelo is a guy that very much needs a good structure. And again, we'll get into all of that. And I think Anthony Edwards, look, I know that they have Colin Sexton and Darius Garland.
Yeah,
so they have a lot of young talent in their backcourt. But in my mind, Anthony Edwards is better than both of them. And if you have to take a guard in this situation, I think that the guy you need to take is probably Anthony Edwards. And, you know, if that means you have to move Garland or Sexton, or, you know, you work with a three-man rotation in the backcourt, I can even see it being conceivable like those guys can play together. Anthony Edwards, I mean, he's 6'4". He's got a 6'8 wingspan. He's really athletic. I don't know if Colin Sexton and if there's enough shots to go around for Colin Sexton and Anthony Edwards to both be on the floor at the same time. But I do think that it works in theory, having those be your three guards on the roster. Like Anthony Edwards, man, like he's a bucket getter. You know, he's a little bit streaky. His efficiency was a little bit lower than I think you want to see out of a player that you're going to take with the number two pick. But a lot of that I think had to do with the level of difficulty of the shots that he takes. Like George was horrible. And Tom Crean could only do so much with him. But, you know, I do think that, remember, the reason why Anthony Edwards, one of the main reasons why Anthony Edwards decided to go with Tom Crean in Georgia, obviously he's a Georgia kid and he wanted to stay home. But Tom Crean also coached Dwayne Wade and coached Victor Oladipo. And that's who Anthony Edwards is the kind of guy like he's going to model his game after. So if you can get Victor Oladipo with the number two pick in this draft, I think you got to take him.
Yeah, and that's what you mentioned the one thing I'd heard about Edwards, which was from a scout, was like, what, sometimes guys who can make tough shots, that translates. Like, that's a skill. Like, if you the next level, everybody's longer and faster, right? So, like, you better be able to hit a contested shot. If you're Adam Morrison and you need to be open, maybe that doesn't work as well. So, I think that that's why he might be the kind of high character guy who can go into Cleveland and then hit some tough shots and kind of just make the whole thing work.
Yeah. And again, a lot of the reason why his shooting percentage was where it was is because Georgia relied on the fact that he can make tough shots a little bit too much, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yep.
All right. You ready to move on?
We will move on to the Minnesota Timberwolves at number three. Again, by the way, just for the record, 14% chance at the top spot. They're a little bit different in terms of need because, look, they think they have the cornerstones. Karl Anthony Towns at center, who is, look, an all-NBA, all-world, as good an offensive center as there is in the league and needs to improve his defense and shows flashes of it but doesn't do it consistently. They believe he and D'Angelo Russell can be a pairing for the future. We'll see. Like, I don't completely buy it, but they, but then they've got some nice other pieces. This team should be better than it is. Look, I like Malik Beasley. Jarrett Culver showed flashes. I love Josh Okogie. You know, they could use, though, if you're going to put Towns and Russell together in the pick, you're going to get dragged in some pick and rolls. You better have some defense out there with them. So I think they're going to look for somebody who can defend, who can play 2-3-4 somewhere in there. They're pretty set at the 1 and the 5. So more on a, we'll call it a wing, call it a whatever position you want to call that. But somewhere in the 2-3-4, and they probably have to be able to defend, because there's just not enough at the 1 and the 5 right now with those guys.
So there's a couple different ways that I think they can go in the situation. First and foremost, I think that I have to say that at this point, I do think that LaMelo Ball is the best prospect left in the draft here. But I think that the similarities between the way that LaMelo plays and needs to play and the way that D'Angelo Russell wants to play, it's just, it's too close. So if you're going to ride with D'Angelo Russell as the point guard of your future, then I don't know if you can take LaMelo Ball in this spot. Especially when there are players that, now there's a couple of them that can really fit and make a lot of sense. One of them who had really like shot up draft boards throughout the season. And, you know, I've seen in the top three in some mocks is Isaac Okoro from Auburn. And I mean, he might be the best individual defender in college basketball period this past season. He can guard 1, 2, 3, 4. He's 6'6", long wingspan. He's got that kind of like wide receiver athleticism that you see out of basketball players that come, that grew up playing football. You know, he's tough. He's willing to play a role. He's a very good passer. He fits in the system. The only problem, can't shoot. Shot 28% from three. Oof. And took a lot of really, really ugly threes. Now, I think he's a worker, and I have spoken to people that know him that say, like, he's the kind of guy that, like, you want to bet on to figure out this jump shot, but it's very risky to take a 3-and-D guy with the number three pick that can't make three. So that's why I'm going to go with Obi Toppin in this spot. And okay. I love Obi for a couple of reasons. One, I think he is the guy that is, like, ready to contribute the most at the top of this draft more than anybody else. He was the National Player of the Year. He 6'9", 220. He is the perfect kind of like small ball four, can play a little bit of five. Yeah. Spaces the floor. He's a good passer. He shot 39% from three this past season. He's a rim protector. He is a guy that's going to be a lob target. Like, you can play him alongside Karl Towns, and you have two big guys that are very versatile and are going to be very difficult to guard because they can both kind of play inside and out. He's not the greatest defender in the world. Like, he can get some weak side blocks because of his athleticism, and he can move his feet enough where he was able to do some switching at the Atlantic 10 level. I have my doubts about whether or not he's going to have quick enough feet to be able to guard in switch situations at the NBA level. But I do think that there is the potential there, and he could do enough offensively where he just, like, he makes sense as a role player and as a piece in, with a team that kind of is in, I don't want to say that the Timberwolves are like in win now mode, period, but I do think that they are a team that can compete away. And
they believe, look, they absolutely believe they are a playoff team next year. They absolutely believe that they should be a team pushing the playoffs, and so they're going to want somebody who can bring some of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So Obi Toppin to me makes the most sense for Minnesota at three.
That does make a lot of sense. What's interesting, you get to number four, the Atlanta Hawks, and you kind of run into something similar here. Trae Young's pretty good. I think they think they're going to keep him at the point, right? So they've got Trae Young with Jeff Teague backing him up. They're you know, the veteran. They're solid there. They went out and got Clint Capela as the role man to go. Look, Clint Capela, for people who don't remember this, you're like, oh, Clint Capela. He was the guy who was James Harden's role man when James Harden really got going in the league. Now, Houston went away from that because they figured out the only thing better than Clint Capela setting a pick for James Harden was James Harden in pure isolation. But Clint Capela is as good a set a pick, roll, athletic guy who can give you some defense as there is. And he's coming back from an injury. But if he's healthy, they're again set at the 1 and the 5. And they've got, you know, we'll see what they end up doing with John Collins. DeAndre Hunter showed some promise this year. They've got Kevin Huerter and Cam Reddish at the two. They are definitely not really, again, I'm not sure they're looking for a ball handling LaMelo Ball kind of guy, but they are looking for athletes. They are a team that likes to go long, and they've got to find some more defense.
So if we're going to take defense for them, like, I just feel like Isaac Okoro is the perfect fit. I don't think that there is enough talent at some of the other spots in this draft where if you're drafting for defense, you can take anybody else other than Okoro at this. But like, you can't, LaMelo Ball and Trae Young cannot be on the same basketball team.
No.
Like, it cannot happen. Like, it just, that would blow a lot of minds.
Yeah, yes, it would not. I would enjoy the entertainment factor of that just as a writer. Like, I'm always looking for just, oh, that's a terrible pairing, let's do that. But that's just not a smart move by them.
No. The other guy that I think makes some sense is Onyeka Okongwu from USC, who, yeah. You know, I did a big thing on this the other day, but I think that there is real potential that he could develop into like a Bam Adebayo kind of an impact player at the NBA. Which, and like, when I say that, how about this for a stat, Kurt? In the last 44 years since blocks started being counted as a stat, right, Bam Adebayo is had 11 seasons, or he's the 12th guy. There were 11 guys before him that averaged 16 points, 10 boards, 5 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. It was done once by like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, once by Bill Walton, once by Larry Bird, once by Chris Webber, twice by Giannis. And it, just like the company that he keeps in putting up the stat line that he put up is just, it's absolutely unbelievable. So when I say Onyeka Okongwu, I think has a chance to be the next Bam Adebayo, that I say that with, like, that's huge, huge praise. But if you have Clint Capella, like, to me, Onyeka Okongwu has a chance to be Bam Adebayo, where you're drafting him basically to be Clint Capella, if that makes sense. So if you already have Clint Capella, I don't think that you can take Onyeka Okongwu, especially when, like, you have a team that has Trae Young and Cam Reddish, guys that don't really want to defend. So I would go Isaac Okoro in this spot and just kind of hope that he gets enough open looks created by Trae Young. Cause like, look, you get a great wing defender and a guy that is going to be asked basically to make just catch and shoot open threes, attack closeouts, pass off the dribble, and pair him with DeAndre Hunter at times. And like, you have two just elite defensive presences on the court at the same time. So it just, Isaac Okoro makes too much sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good fit for them. Cause they're just those, like I said, those last two, when you get to Minnesota and Atlanta, they've got a couple of their core pieces. They're trying to improve and get the right guys around them and get some defense around them. So, yeah, that works.
Before we get into the rest of this mock draft, a quick word from our sponsors.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We would now jump to number 5. Wow, we're already to 5. Man, Detroit needs a star, right? Like, they've got Blake Griffin. I don't think he's the long-term future. They'd be open to moving him, but they're not. Derrick Rose is there again. I love the Derrick Rose comeback story. He's not your future star. With all due respect, I don't think you can build around Luke Kennard. Christian Wood, by the way. Christian Wood's breaking out. Christian Wood's going to get paid a little bit this summer and is breaking out. But you need ball handling. You need a star.
So you know who we got to go with, Kurt?
I do. I think it sets up perfectly for him.
It's our man, LaMelo Ball. I'm going to give my LaMelo Ball spiel here. I feel comfortable talking about him. Normally, I don't like talking about international prospects, and LaMelo is coming from Australia, so he counts as an international prospect because I don't watch as much film on them. I watched every single game that LaMelo Ball played in Australia. All, I think it was 15 of them. And that, like, I invested like 30 hours in watching LaMelo Ball play basketball in Australia. And I'll tell you what, he is, like, his basketball IQ is absolutely off the charts. Like, he is an unbelievable passer and an unbelievable playmaker. And I think that he's going to walk into the NBA and be one of the 10 best players in the entire NBA at operating out of pick and rolls, like right off the bat, the second he gets to the league. And if there's one thing that we've seen with players that have been coming into the league recently, it's guys that can kind of do things at that level out of pick and rolls, whether it's Luka Doncic or Ja Morant or Trae Young, like elite passers at the point guard spot have had a significant impact right off the bat. And LaMelo Ball can do all of those things. Now, he's not an elite athlete like Ja Morant, not even close. He's not an elite shooter like Trae Young, not even close. Luka Doncic was the MVP of the EuroLeague when he was 19, which is the second best league on the planet, while LaMelo Ball was like 3-13 playing in the NBL. And like, there's a lot of other context. And if you want to go to the college basketball site, like I did a whole deep dive on LaMelo Ball to kind of explain what that context is. But suffice to say, like, defense is not his greatest strength, although he did get better. And shooting is not his greatest strength, although he did get better as the season went along with Illawarra. The one other thing I will say is this: LaMelo Ball, more than anybody else, I think is someone that needs to have the right fit in the NBA and the right organizational fit, because you don't want LaVar Ball to be too close. You don't want to have him deal with distractions. There are a lot of red flags about like things that are going on in his life. And like, we don't really need to get into all of that right now. I think most people kind of understand what all of that is. But if you are an NBA organization, you need to do your due diligence and find out like if he is going, like if you truly believe he is a guy that loves basketball and wants to be a star, or that is in love with like the celebrity life and wants to be an Instagram influencer kind of a deal. Now, I think that he loves ball. I think that he is a guy that is going to work. And if you look at kind of like the development path that Lonzo was on, he went from being a point guard that did have some defensive question marks to being a guy that can kind of play as like a secondary ball handler and be a 38% three-point shooter in the NBA and be a guy that is like known as one of the best defenders in the league. Lonzo Ball like averaged 13-7-7 while shooting 38% from three. Like, he turned into a very, very good pro.
You know what? But this is one of those chances. Now, suddenly I'm going to go blank on his name off the shooting coach in New Orleans off the top of my head. I'm going to go blank now. Got to give the guy some credit because Lonzo Ball's shot looks 100% better. And by the way, Brandon Ingram developed the jumper this year and became an all-star. Really good work down there. That's in New Orleans, but giving the shout out to, like, when you see that kind of player development, agents take notice of that kind of stuff. And they're like, hey, everybody got better when they went there.
Yeah. The only other thing that I would note about LaMelo is that one, like, he and Lonzo are very different players. Like yes. Lonzo is at his best as kind of like a secondary ball handler in the NBA, whereas like LaMelo Ball has to be the lead guard, ball handler, playmaker, the James Harden, Luka Doncic, Trae Young kind of, like, he has to be that guy. He's got the shake, he's got the wiggle, he's got the handle, he's got the passing ability. That's the guy that he is. He also shot, I believe it ended up being 27.9% from three in the NBL this past season, whereas Lonzo Ball on like 200 something attempts from three while as a freshman at UCLA shot 41% from three. And LaMelo's jump shot is significantly more jacked up than Lonzo Ball's was when he came into the NBA. So you got to keep all of that in mind. That said, I do think LaMelo's I don't know if he is a worker, but I do think that he'll put in the work when he gets to the NBA. I do think that he is a guy where you coach him up on the shooting and you coach him up on his defense, and he can be like, get to a point where it is at the very least an acceptable level. And if he gets there with his passing ability, you're looking at a really good kind of point guard, lead guard at the NBA. So LaMelo Ball just makes too much sense. Like, you're getting a steal for what his upside could end up being with the fifth pick in this draft.
That is fair. And I think that's the kind of thing Detroit needs. Like, he's going to get the ball in his hands. He's going to get time to develop. He's going to get an opportunity, which is, I think, a lot of the stuff he needs. So that works for me. We move on to the number six pick, the New York Knicks, and the sense that whatever they do will be wrong. they do have some young talent on that team, by the way. Mitchell Robinson's showing some promise at center. RJ Barrett put up very inefficient counting, a lot of counting stats, but very inefficiently. But that's largely because he was asked to play out of position much of the year. He was didn't really have, I mean, eventually Elfrid Payton was there, but they've got Nikhil Atina. Well, Dennis Smith Jr. is the guy who should really be there. They just, you can't have RJ as the secondary ball handler. He had to be the primary ball handler for way too much of the season in New York. They need talent beyond that, though. I mean, they are not in a position to be picky.
So I think, like, you probably need to find an answer at the point guard spot for the Knicks, right?
Yes, like, that is the weakest spot on, with all due respect to Dennis Smith Jr., who I like, that is by far their weakest spot.
So I think there's really two choices that you have to make and two players that you can pick from here. It's probably Cole Anthony or Killian Hayes from the French kid that played in Germany this past season. Now, I've watched a whole bunch of Killian Hayes tape over the course of the last like 6 or 7 days from the time that we are recording this. And I'm very up and down on what I think about him as a potential pro. Like he's very left-hand dominant, but he is an exceptional passer out of ball screens, especially when he's going to his left. He's not a great shooter in terms of percentages at this point, but the stroke actually looks fairly okay. And he is very, very good at being able to create space to get his shot off, like with like step backs and kind of like the cross jabs, and the way that he can create space for his shot makes me think that if he can figure it out, like he's going to be a really good shooter at the point guard or at the NBA level. Now, the question is, like, do you trust that he's going to be able to get strong enough to be able to defend at the NBA level? Like, do you think that at 6'5" and not quite as explosive as other NBA point guards, he can kind of play that role? I don't know. There are some real question marks when it comes to that. So you got to make the decision, Cole Anthony from North Carolina or Killian Hayes. And I just think that with the way that, again, passing has translated with past point guards, Killian Hayes to me is the guy that makes more sense. Also because I think Cole Anthony, and we can get more into this whenever we end up picking him, I do think that Cole Anthony is a guy where he really needs to have the ball in his hands to kind of be like a ball dominant score point guard type, something of a Russell Westbrook. I am just not convinced that he has the ability to be that guy at the NBA level. Like, I don't think that he can kind of do the things that a Kobe White is able to do. I don't think that he can do the things like a Devontae Graham is able to do. I'm just not convinced that he is the guy that can play it, play the role that he needs to be able to play at the NBA level. And if you're asking a guy to do something different than what he does best when he gets to the NBA, to me, that just doesn't necessarily seem to make sense. And Cole Anthony is also a full year older than Killian Hayes. So I'm going to go with Killian Hayes here. What do you think about that? And how do you think New York Knicks fans will react to seeing like another European point guard getting drafted?
Yeah, they'll boo it. They will end up booing it because they should. But I'm with you. At this point in this draft, he strikes me as the guy with the upside, right? Like he's got a craftiness to his scoring and some, look, he's hit some, I saw some video of far less than you and don't pretend to have the skilled eyes that you do. But I mean, I saw him hit some step backs and some stuff. Like he's got some, like you said, there's potential there. You can't really teach the craftiness. It's not super explosive, but he's able to get open and, like you said, find the pass, find the shot. So I think he could develop into the kind of point guard they need, especially because it just, you can move RJ off the ball and it makes RJ, let's hope he gets more efficient. He can't really be less efficient. If he gets more efficient next to him, suddenly you're starting to get something there.
Yeah. And the other part of it is that Killian Hayes is 6'5". Yep. And you're drafting him. If you're drafting him at 6, then you're betting on that 3-point shot coming around eventually. And at 6'5", if that 3-point shot does come around, then Killian Hayes will be able to play a little bit off the ball. Personally, I don't think it's the right fit for what the New York Knicks need, but I do think that Tyrese Haliburton is a better prospect than Killian Hayes for the role that we are just like kind of right now talking about Killian Hayes eventually playing. But I think that in this spot, you got to choose between Killian Hayes or Cole Anthony. I can't advocate building an organization around Cole Anthony as a point guard, not at this point. Even though bringing Cole Anthony back to New York would be a lot of fun for Greg Anthony, for Cole, who is from New York City, I think it's got to be killing pace.
Yeah, there will be a lot of lobbying behind the scenes to try to make that happen, but I'm with you. I think they go with Cole Hayes. I don't know what Leon Rose, their new... This is one of those with the new front office. We'll see what direction they try to go with it. It's actually the same thing with the next pick, number 7, Chicago, right? Like, radically new front office, much smarter front office. I think we're going to see smart stuff from them, but they've got a lot of questions. Kobe White exploded at the end of the year as a center, as a point guard and as a ball handler. By the way, still the best hair in the league now. He's a scoring guy. He's not horribly efficient. Who do you put next to him? Can he play with Zach LaVine? Lauri Markkanen looked buried this year. I just think he's better than he looked, but we'll see. Wendell Carter Jr., kind of the same thing. I'm not totally sold. So there's a lot of, like, how does it all fit together questions there. And then you should be, I guess point guard would be the position of need the most, but I don't know that they're going to be that picky because Kobe's going to have the ball in his hands some too.
Yeah. So I do kind of think that Tyrese Halliburton makes sense here specifically because of his ability. Like, to me, Kobe White is still someone that kind of profiles best as a scorer, right? And Zach LaVine's still at Chicago, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Again, another kind of guy
that decide how much. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, like, I think he's another guy that kind of profiles best as, like, a scorer. So if you're looking for someone that can create some space, that can play as a secondary ball handler, that can operate in ball screens and is a really good passer and can actually defend really well. Like, I don't think Tyrese Halliburton is going to be a great one-on-one defender, at least not wider. Like, he probably weighs 170 pounds soaking wet, Kurt, at 6'5", with 6'11" wingspan. Like, he has the opposite problem of us. I need to donate him 15 of my pounds.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's where he's at right now. So I think that he makes a lot of sense.
He's more of a combo too, right?
Yeah. Well, he played played off the ball as a freshman and was really, really efficient and averaged like 8-4-4 for an Iowa State team that had a ton of talent that completely underachieved as a freshman. As a sophomore, he averaged 16-6-6 and like 2.5 steals. And again, super efficient from beyond the arc as a lead guard. So he can do both. He can play on the ball. He can play off the ball. Like, the guy that I would compare him to more than anything else is Lonzo Ball. Like, I think that if we look up in 4 years, I could see Tyrese Halliburton playing as a secondary ball handler next to a kind of a shoot first point guard, averaging 13-7-7, a couple of steals, and shooting 38-39% from three. Like, I could see him being that guy. I could also see a situation where, like, the defense doesn't really develop, and since his shot is so low and so weird and such a weird release that he can never really get it off at the NBA level, I can also see that being a reality. The other thing is that Denny Avdija is still out there. And Denny Avdija is a guy that is like 6'8", 6'9", and a playmaking big man that can play a little bit of three, probably better at the four. And I do think – I haven't watched as much Denny Avdija as I have of Tyrese Halliburton, but I do think he's a guy that's probably a little bit of a better prospect. And again, he's another guy that can be a secondary playmaker that can fit more in lineups with the talent that you already have around them. And isn't the guy that they just hired a European guy?
Yes, he is, as a matter of fact.
So I do kind of think that Denny Avdija makes a lot of sense there as well.
Yeah, he comes out. I mean, yes, they're a new guy. I've had the name pronounced for me, and I'm going to see. This is what happens half a beer in. I'm already like, I'm not going to try to pronounce that again.
Look, on the College Basketball Talk podcast, we are not beholden to pronouncing names correctly. We never get them right. So I'm going to try it. Ready? Arturis Karnasovas. What do you think?
I think that's correct. And I had Keith Smith on when I did it, and he said, no, it's Latvian. And he rattled it off for me, but I don't have Keith with me right now. I'll have to hit him up anyway. But I think that makes sense. A lot of teams I know are really high on Denny, like top five type of high on him. So if he falls,
I think we got to go with him in this spot.
Yeah,
just because
I think if he falls all the way to 7, teams will jump at that. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll go with Denny Avdija there. Even though, like, my personal preference as a prospect is Tyrese Haliburton. If you can't tell, I really really like Tyrese Haliburton as a prospect.
I picked up on that subtle, and this is a good range for Tyrese, by the way, because next up on our list, if after Chicago we get to the Charlotte Hornets, Michael Jordan did not get to watch the NCAA tournament and fall in love with someone his scouts don't love this year. So it's a little more wide open. Look, PJ Washington, by the way, sneaky great year for them. I don't know. Look, not a lot of people were watching Charlotte Hornets basketball because it wasn't pretty this year, but PJ Washington's one of the sneaky better rookies out there. I don't know if he's going to make first team all rookie or not, but keep an eye on him. Devontae Graham exploded for them at the point guard, had the ball in his hands, most improved player type of season, but you can't really build around him, I don't think. So they're just looking for talent, man. There's not a position on that roster where you're like, oh, we're locked up here in the future because we have X.
You know who's still on the board?
Who?
And who is probably a top five pick this year by just about every standard and everybody that looks at this kind of a thing? And who would not get picked on a team that has Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter on their roster, and would not get picked by a New York Knicks team that's desperate to get a point guard on their roster, and who would not get selected by the Detroit Pistons, who need a superstar and who don't need another Blake Griffin type, is Onyeka Okongwu.
Yeah, see, I think that's a great call here. Yeah.
I love
there's Onyeka some teams Okongwu out there that are really high on him. He's gone up boards.
So let me for people that haven't, I mean, not a lot of people watched USC basketball this year. Let's just be honest. So
no.
Let me just kind of break him down real quick. He is a 6'9" center with a 7'2" wingspan. What he says is 7'2". I've never seen the official measurement. And if you just kind of assume that, like, everybody gives themselves an extra couple inches on their wingspan, just like they give themselves an extra couple inches on their height, we can say that he has a plus wingspan without knowing exactly what it is. But he's a terrific athlete. He is a terrific rim protector. He's a guy that has the quick enough feet to be able to get out and switch and guard point guards. Like, there were a lot of situations this year that you can find where he guarded good perimeter players, good drivers in clutch situations on switches, and kept them from getting to the basket and got blocks. Like, he is a very, very good modern NBA center that can switch ball screens, that can protect the rim. I'm not totally convinced that the shooting is going to be there, but he did make some jumpers this season, and he did shoot 72% from three, and he was just super productive. He averaged 16 points and 9 boards. He is a really, really good post player, but not in the sense that, like, he's going to overpower you. Like, he's 6'9 to 245, but he's like a finesse player around the basket. Like, he's got this, he's right-handed, but he's got this move where he kind of faces you up, rips through, takes one dribble to the right, spins back to his left, and takes this little, like, 6-foot lefty jump hook. And it's so pretty to watch. And guys that are that young that can make that shot tend to be able to develop their offense pretty well. Like, he's got a great touch around the basket. I'm convinced that he's going to end up at minimum being like a Clint Capella in the NBA. Like, I think that's what his floor is. Maybe he ends up not quite being as good, but he just has all the markings of being a very, very good NBA center in what the modern NBA is. And now the difference, the thing that stands between a guy like a Clint Capella and someone like a Bam Adebayo or even like a Draymond Green in his prime is the ability to pass. Like, what makes Draymond Green so effective is when two go to guard Steph Curry. Like, when Draymond Green sets the screen and his man the short roll where it's a 4-on-3 situation and Draymond Green makes the right pass to create an open shot for somebody, like, Day-Day is great at that. Bam Adebayo has become a great passer.
Yeah.
I don't know if Onyeka Okongwu will ever have the ball handling ability of either of those guys, but if he has the ability to be like a 3-4 assist guy in the NBA as, like, in those short roll actions and make the right decisions, that's going to make him a very good player. Now, he didn't have too many of those opportunities in college. Like, there were a couple times where he quick reaction, short roll, made the right decision. There were also times where a quick reaction, short roll, and he couldn't make the right read and turn the ball over. But there were a lot of instances where you could find him making the right read out of the post, where a double team came and he made a quick read and made the right pass and created an open look for his teammates on the perimeter. And my belief is that if you are able to make the right read with your back to the basket out of the post, you're going to be able to make the right read and short roll actions. You just have to be taught to do it and given more opportunities to do it. Does that make sense? Like if he can, if he has the intelligence to be able to read a defense quickly and make a decision out of it in one spot on the floor, he's going to be able to do that in the other spot on the floor with time and coaching and film study and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not saying that Onyeka Okongwu is definitely going to be the next Bam Adebayo and definitely going to be the next like small ball five that changes the way the NBA plays. But I do think that he is going to be a very, very, very good center with the chance to end up being like an all-star caliber player. And there's not a lot of guys I think you can say have a chance to be an all-star caliber player in this year's draft.
No, the teams are really high on him. Like you said, with the passing, he was making the basics. He was making your basic first read, second read type stuff. He might have to do, like you said, be taught how to do the more advanced stuff, but he'll have time. He'll have opportunity. I think whatever team gets him to, fans are going to love him. Like everybody loves an energy big, right? Everybody loves a guy who just hustles.
He's also like a great kid too. Like he's smart and he's engaging when you speak to him. Like there's a lot of guys like 18 and 19 years old to get to the NBA and just like don't understand what it takes to be able to be likable in front of a camera, if that makes sense, to be able to make yourself like someone that is in like you want to see a conversation with. Like here's an example. Mike Schmitz over at ESPN has this awesome series where he does these film rooms with all of these players and just kind of breaks down plays and talks to them about it. And there are some guys that he does it with. I don't want to like specifically name names, but it's just like it's very difficult to watch because those kids just have absolutely no personality and they're not engaging at all a mellow ball. And it's very difficult to like sit through the entire thing and just watch like Mike talk. Onyeka Okongwu, like I loved watching him because he's smart and he's able to explain like what is happening on the court. Like I don't want to say eloquently, but he's able to, in not so many words, like what I'm doing now, he doesn't do. He's able to say what he needs to say and get the point made and can break down basketball. It's just, he was a fun guy to watch. Tyrese Haliburton was a fun guy to watch do those things. And I think he's going to be someone that, like fans really, really like. I did not say that well. I'm the opposite of Onyeka Okongwu.
So the people in Charlotte will be happy with him and we'll jump forward to the next spot in our draft. The Washington Wizards. Their backcourt is set. They believe they are a playoff team next year. They are getting the band back together, man. John Wall will be back healthy. Everybody wants to trade Bradley Beal except the people who actually have to approve his trade. He doesn't want to be traded. Tommy Shepard, the owner, doesn't want to. Nobody wants to trade him. So you're going to see the Wall-Beal backcourt. Rui Hachimura had a nice rookie season. They got Thomas Bryant and some people up front, but basically anybody at the 3, 4, and 5, that's where they need help. They're not going to stick anybody at the 1 or 2 and bury them behind those two guys.
So I do think that Tyrese Haliburton kind of makes sense there because – again, a floor spacer, a secondary ball handler, a guy that can, you know, Bradley Beal is going to have the ball in his hands and a lot and is going to shoot a lot of shots. John Wall is going to have the ball in his hands a lot. Tyrese Haliburton is a guy that is going to be able to space the floor, is a guy that is going to be able to create out of certain situations. When John Wall inevitably needs to rest, like as he's coming back from this Achilles injury, you can slide him over and play the point like next to Brad Beal, right?
They don't have – look, when you get behind that, there's what last season was Ish Smith, Shabazz Napier, Gary Payton II was on there, you know, Garrison Matthews, Jerome Robinson. There's nothing. Like, it's those two guys, but you're right. There's not much depth there, and they can get some off the wire, but if they really like one of the – if they really like Haliburton, it's a good spot to take him.
Yeah, so the other – there's two other guys that I think you definitely need to consider – in the spot if you're the Wizards. One is Precious Achiuwa, because I do think that he is, like, if you need someone that can give you like defense and rebounding at the 5 spot, he's probably the best available in terms of what's left on the board now that Onyeka Okongwu is gone. And the other guy is Devin Vassell from Florida State, because like he's probably, again, the best 3-and-D guy left on the board in this situation. But I do think that I just... I love the options and the versatility that Tyrese Halliburton provides, and the fact that he will be able to allow you to do certain things right off the bat. And I also think, again, Precious Achiuwa and Rui Hachimura might be a little bit too similar in terms of the way that they want to play. So I don't know. I personally in this spot would go with Tyrese Halliburton. And I say that knowing that I'm a little bit biased in terms of how good I think Tyrese Halliburton would be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I think that that's a look. This is kind of the range. Like a lot of people have him falling in the 8, 9, 10, 11 type of range. And again, John Wall's had a whole lot of injuries. You need somebody behind him who can play some minutes and a young guy who could grow into that role. Makes a lot of sense to me.
All right, so let's do it. Tyrese Halliburton, number 9, Washington Wizards. All right, let's move on to who's 10?
At number 10, the Phoenix Suns. Obviously, when you talk about Phoenix, you've got some pieces. They got two pieces they like. They obviously love Devin Booker at the 2. They love DeAndre Ayton along the front line. After that, look, Ricky Rubio came in and gave them solid point guard minutes and was just incredibly professional. He is not the long-term answer next to Devin Booker. Whoever is there, though, should better play some defense. They got Kelly Oubre at the 3. They've got Aaron Baines had a really kind of quietly great year for them. And they at least got off to a hot start. Look, they're building around Booker and Ayton, and they're looking for pieces that can be on that timeline and part of the long-term future with them.
So, oh man, like building around Booker and Ayton makes it tough. So you probably want someone that can make some shots, right?
Yes, you probably you need shooting.
And you probably want someone that can play a little bit of defense, right?
You definitely need that.
So I don't know if it kind of clogs up what's already on the roster and if he kind of fills a role that has already been filled, but does Devin Vassell make sense there? You know, he's a 6'6" wing. He shot 42% from 3, and he played in a Florida State system where like defense and switchability is the single most important thing that you can do there. Like I have no questions about whether or not he's going to be able to be a good defender and be switchable, because like that's literally all they did. You know, they basically played 5 guys that were all the same size and asked them to guard like whoever they were like matched up with, switch everything, blah blah blah, that whole type of deal. So I do think that he makes sense there. He's only 19 years old. I don't think he can be much more than a defense and 3-point shooter. Like I'm not sold on his ability to handle the ball, beat people off the bounce, any of that kind of stuff, but I do think that he kind of makes sense in that situation. Like I don't know if you want, like, Cole Anthony's probably the best available, but do you really need another ball dominant lead guard that you don't know if he can really pass and you don't know if he can really be a great shooter that you are going to put alongside Devin Booker? To me, that doesn't make sense as a fit.
Now, and Vassell, what I've heard is look, kind of a prototypical 3-and-D, but maybe doesn't have the star upside. Like, he just doesn't have that elite athleticism, that big first step. He's not going to be that guy, but also he's a high floor and he can defend. He's just you kind of know what you're getting there, and there's real value to having that guy on that team where, you know, you're going to need that kind of player next to Booker.
Yeah, so let's go with Devin Vassell there, which brings us to the end of the first part of this podcast. So if you want to hear how the rest of this draft ends up playing out, please, after you rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast, go find the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I will link it in the description of this pod. So click that link and go find the second part of this NBA draft podcast, and we will break down picks 11 through 30 over on Pro Basketball Talk. Kurt, I guess I'll talk to you in about a couple of minutes, man.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, we got, do I have time to get another beer?
We might need one, man. We might be. This draft is getting kind of rough. We're already at Devin Vassell.
We're already at Devin Vassell, and we're not out of the top 10.
All right, man. I'll see you over on your podcast.
All right, sounds good.